Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It is truly a distinct honor and enormous pleasure for me to stand in front of you, the distinguished colleagues, and also in this beautiful historic site. And I want to thank Nick for bringing me here, and I want to thank the Foundation of Science, Technology, and all the other sponsors for having me here in London. And I realized that it's about 2:30 in Beijing, where I came from yesterday, and my jet lag just began to kick in, and I hope that does not really cause your vote of no confidence in me. All right. So I well, just a bit of clarification. I just 2 days ago, I just changed my job to take on a new challenge to lead the Institute for Public Policy in Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. This is a bit of sudden change because I just started earlier for this new job. But I still use my Brookings and Tsinghua University template to prepare this slides, and please bear with me on that. Nick just made an excellent case for the necessity, for the urgency, and also for the desirability of addressing climate change. And it is only on that achievability that he and I will diverge a little bit on this. So I will, for the sake of making a debate, I will try to be a little bit more provocative on this, and I hope you can bear with me on that also. And I totally agree with the two cases he just presented for China and for the UK. I think those are where we really see the hope. We see tremendous progress made. But for the rest of the world, that's where I see the but part of his talk. So to answer this question, this is the homework assigned to me. Can the goal set out in Paris Agreement on response to climate change be delivered? And this was very well defined, 2 degrees. I'm not going to talk about 1.5 degree because this I'm going to focus on the 2 degrees. And my answer is it is quite unlikely to deliver this 2-degree target set out in the Paris Agreement. I will explain why in such an order. And first of all, I will talk a little bit about this NDC. I think this is for the NDCs, we started off, you know, we never actually aimed at this target. Then for the implementation so far, and I see it is quite inadequate, and the enabling conditions are not quite there. Then I will end this brief remarks of mine with this call for reform in global climate governance. All right. Even 2 years ago, we were... let's see what is needed for 2°C. I think we have by now come to this consensus. In order to limit the global warming to below 2°C, the global emission need to peak by 2020. It's not very far from us. We need to decline by about 25% by 2030, which is less than 12 years from today, and reach a net zero emission around 2070. That's also not too far. This is far from us, and is a daunting challenge. A year ago, we were still we have this sense of optimism. We see finally the global carbon emission has leveled off, right, ever since 2014. And this is also true for China. For China, we see a very rapid growth of carbon emission starting from the this new century. And 2014, that is the year when President Xi and President Obama got together and announced made that joint announcement. China wants to peak the carbon emission around 2030. And interestingly, that is the year we actually see a stop of growth in that year. Then that generated this very high level optimism. And people were asking whether or not the Chinese emission has already been peaked. But where are we now? Well, the past 5 years has been quite clear, has been the warmest 5 years ever since 1880. And the atmospheric CO2 is at record high. It's still growing at an alarm rate at roughly 3 ppm per year. So we are, and the greenhouse gas emission last year increased 2.7 globally. Well, that is a major growth. Well, this is after the resumption of growth the year before, 2017, which is 1.6% growth. All right, so we see a level off, then we see a resuming of the growth. So that's what we see. We can see the atmospheric carbon concentration. We don't really see any sign of stopping or slowing down. And on the other hand, when we look at the global fossil fuel CO2 emission, especially last year, 2018, is quite troubling, and it got a record high. That is the challenge we face. Now, according to this emissions gap report 2018, released later last year, the emission will not peak, right, by 2030. Remember, we say that the condition to achieve 2 degrees C is to peak by 2020. But this report told us the emission will not peak by even 2030, right? And if all countries fully implement their climate commitment, right, we still cannot peak. So this is the gap that we really need. Accounting on these unconditional NDCs, the gap by 2030, that's a 15 gigatons, right? If we're counting on the conditional NDC scenario, that's still 13 gigatons, 13 billion tons. So it's a very big gap we need. And if we really want to go 1.5C, which is an even bigger gap, we're not going to consider that. Right, we say it is inadequate NDCs because according to NDCs that was pledged and confirmed under the Paris Agreement is that NDC can only take us to about 3 degree warming. So that means from the very beginning with that NDC, we were not going to achieve that target. So we have the Paris Agreement told us, 2 degrees is where we would like to have, and 3 degrees is where we committed to achieve. So there is a very big gap between the two. Now this is the figure last year. So when you look at China's a growth of 4.7%. We may or may not agree on this exact number, but the fact is, there is a significant jump last year after a few years of leveling off. The United States, that has been decreasing in the last decade or so, but last year, the emissions increased 2.5%. Right, EU in general has been decreasing and at a very high rate, but last year it was decreasing at a much smaller rate. India Nick just mentioned, that is a jump of 6.3% of jump. So these signs are telling us, it's a very troubling sign, right? So we are not really stepping into that the target that we really would like to have. Now, again, citing the emissions gap report, then we can see the gap, the emissions gap, is not closing down. It's actually larger than previously estimated. So we get a bigger challenge from as compared to the point where we started. G20 countries are good examples because they collectively represent 78% of the world emissions, and collectively, G20 countries are not yet on track to meet their commitments under the Paris Agreement. It's even more troubling if we look at all these tables, right? We see a few countries are doing a good job on track. You know, for instance, Brazil, China, and India, all these countries, Japan, but for a majority of the countries under the within G20, they're not really on track to meet their commitments. But just put a note over here: on track does not necessarily mean these countries are doing a great job. It could also mean that these countries did not really have ambitious enough NDCs. But this is but this also tells us the countries that made the commitment are not really delivering the commitment. So if I cite my colleague David Victor's paper on Nature published a year ago, 2017, and he was more negative than I am. He said no major advanced industrialized countries is on track to meet their he considers, this is a wishful thinking. This bravado are eclipsing reality. And he thinks that the countries in the EU and struggling to increase the energy efficiency and renewable power to the level that they claim they would. Japan made the promise, but they are now facing a lot of the costs that they are unwilling or unable to pay for that cost. United States, even without Donald Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Agreement, still having this problem. Is shifting the economy to clean energy too slowly. All right. So he used this figure on top of this, the United States, Europe in the middle, and Japan on the bottom. You can see the top line, the white line, that is where the policy, where the business as usual, the solid pink line, that's where the policy is actually going, and this blue, light blue line is really what is commitment. So you can see in between the commitment, the pledge, and between the target, the policy, the policy needed, and the policy enacted, there is a huge gap. These are just for a few countries. So the political economy right now in nations and also internationally are not really helping, right? In the United States, and that withdrawal itself is a problem, and the administration is now removing as many as 78 environmental protection rules. So EPA will have very hard time to achieve their original goals. They are now loosen emission standards for coal plants. Climate change issues becoming even more polarized in that country. So I cite David Victor. So under Trump, so this gap between what was promised and what will be achieved has widened. So the government now is itself is a problem. And many companies and cities and states in the United States, they try to keep their cutting emissions, but for now, most of them are still just claims. So that's the problem. Japan, I just mentioned, has its own problem delivering their own goals. China, as Nick just said, has done a very good job to stay on track to meet meet China's commitment under the Paris Agreement, and also earlier, under the Copenhagen Accord. Under the Copenhagen, China promised to cut the energy intensity by 40 to 45%, and last year, 2018, China has achieved 46%, so doing pretty well, and also for the Paris Agreement. But there are a number of other fronts that are not really doing well. Carbon market is one of that, right? Highly anticipated and it was expected to have high impact, especially back in September 2015 when the plan was first announced. But now, a year after that deadline, and the China's carbon market, the national carbon market, is not quite there yet. And there are 7 pilot projects within China, and that are going on, but unfortunately, the price of carbon is too low. It's just around 10 euros. Right? It's not really working very well to really bring down the emissions level. And some problem. Then the Chinese success to bring down the carbon intensity, energy intensity, having a lot to do with the Chinese actions and policy to address the domestic air pollution problem. As a matter of fact, just by addressing the air pollution problem, China could deliver the Paris Agreement. But right now, what happened is, with this economic slowdown in the recent years, in the last 5 years, now we really feel this economic pressure. And this pressure is actually weakening the climate actions. For instance, the target set for the air pollution next year is 3%, to bring down the PM2.5 level concentration by 3%. Previous year was 15%. You can see the strength of the policy target in this regard. Coal consumption and now has a rebound last year, the year before, and also the year before. In 2016, when Lord Nick Stern, myself, and others, we published a paper, we basically declared the end of a coal-fired growth. And now the coal consumption has rebound for 3 consecutive years. And the international politics, especially U.S.-China relations, is actually damaging this climate community also in China and internationally. Nick just mentioned 2014 and 2015, the U.S.-China joint announcement on climate change, joint presidential statement, really played a very positive role, helped to set the foundation for the Paris Agreement. Now China and the U.S. are not collaborating very well on that front. In fact, we're just fighting against each other in many other fronts. So the subsidies for solar and wind, other clean energy, is being removed ever since last year. So we'll wait to see what would happen. And we'll see basically a subsidy-free sector and clean energy. Again, Brazil is not very promising, and if other countries follow suit after Brazil, that will create a bigger problem. clean energy investment. Ever since 2009, China has played a major role, leading role in clean energy development. And just about one-third, 30% to one-third of the investment comes from China globally. And now, last year, what we see, this is a decline of total investment in clean energy, and the global economy right now is not cooperating, right? The 10 years after the global financial crisis, then we see a lot of even more uncertainties on the global economy. And a lot of people were just putting hope on the fiscal policy. Carbon tax, for instance. Carbon market, I mentioned carbon market. But now we see these proposed good ideas, fiscal policies, now really faces political resistance. Last year, we have witnessed the Yellow Vest movement in Paris, France, and other spill over to other European countries. So I think that this is quite telling, right? The people in Paris are protesting the Paris Agreement itself. So you can begin to see this kind of conflict. Well, as a matter of fact, my colleague David Victor would say this Paris logic itself is not working, right? Well, this is what he meant. He thinks this is a Paris Agreement to set this flexibility target, and the idea is for countries to look at each other and to learn. But the fact is, this is this logic threatens to unravel because the national governments are not making promises they are making promises that they are unable to honor. And he put it in a pretty harsh words. He said, ambition is no substitution for action. And he believes, which I agree, this political logic is this. Climate change is an issue of a huge public interest with this a tremendous externality. And in countries, government feel they must see must be seen to lead on global solution, and they take the action. But it's easy for these politicians to make promises and to the voters. And but the thing is, it's really hard for these politicians to keep this because of the high cost, because of other pressures from well-organized groups. So far, we do not really have a system for international governance to erase these basic political facts. So thinks this Paris Agreement has unwittingly fanned the flame by letting the government set vague and unaccountable pledges. So how are we going to address this problem? Well, this is a Chinese saying. The Chinese saying is 实事求是, the seeking truth from fact. For those of you who visited our Central Party School, you see this big sign put on, carved on the stone, put it in front of the entrance, the party school, right? That the seeking truth from fact. What are the facts? The fact is these pledges are voluntary, they are not legally binding, right? And the implementation faces multiple challenges. And this UN-led top-down process is not really working as well as we would like to believe. We would like to believe that they work, but they are not. I just give you one example. This is just what I took from the EU website, right? This is just look at those words in this brown rectangles. It said, at Paris, which is, I just quote, at Paris Climate Conference in December 2015, 195 countries adopted the first ever universal, legally binding global climate deals. Well, those words are really great. They raise great. But the problem is they are not exactly the fact that we would like them to be. All right, so there are certain things that have been working well ever since the UNFCCC has been adopted. And for instance, these domestic policies and actions, lots of them are really working great, right? We see a lot of examples in China. We see a lot of great examples here in the UK. Technological innovation and deployment has been really wonderful. This actually, I believe, probably played the biggest role in bringing down the emissions in some part of the world and bring down the energy and carbon intensities. Investment in technology and also consensus about climate change sciences, decoupling of the economy from fossil fuel, and this younger generation and the mobilization of that played a very important role, right? Just one example here, it's in China, energy intensity has been decreasing by 5% a year in the last 40 years. And the technology has been amazing. We keep constantly fail to predict the drop of the prices of solar radiation. And now we see more than ever the opportunities of green development, low carbon development for sustainability, for this green chemistry, industrial ecology, renewables, you name it. So we see just huge opportunities, right? And lots of investment in industry. So installation, deployment of clean energy grow at an exponential level. Something I also want to point out is this decarbonization. Decarbonization is actually happening in many, I would say most of the countries, amazing rate. In fact, it has accelerated. Look at the three countries, I just picked them up. The top curve, that's United States, the UK is in the middle, and China is in the bottom. We can see the last decade, ever since 2005, 2008, we see an acceleration of low carbon transition, this decarbonization. So the technology investment is really behind all of this. These are the things that have been working well, but there are things that have not been working so well. Well, for instance, the targets, we set the targets, we have not been able to meet them. The finance is for international finance under the UNFCCC is not available simply. The technology transfer under UNFCCC has not been working really well, and emissions did not respond to the UNFCCC process, and carbon market has been has not been very, very successful and does not really meet our expectations, be it in EU, in China, in California. So if we can see the stages, from the 1990, just about the time when this whole thing was created, we can see the decade of 1990, that's 1% a year of growth. And the decade of the first decade of the century, 3%. And the recent decade, that's again the 1%. They're not really corresponding to this Kyoto Protocol, Copenhagen, and Paris Agreement. So I think we really need to do a lot of rethinking of this the climate governance. First thing, we need to consider the stakeholders. And Nick just talked about the role. You know, so far we have been relying primarily on government to play this role, right? But we really need to think about, say, the business, the NGOs. My friend Isabel Hilton is here. The NGOs, you know, the people, you know, who are passionate about this. I think the UN should play a much lesser role right? I know, you know, we celebrate the making of the rule book at the, a few weeks ago at the COP24. But the thing is, when you're thinking about this, this is really strange, right? I think the UN is taking care of too many details of this process. I mean, and the UN is not very good at this. As a matter of fact, you know, nearly 200 parties doing these technicalities is not really a good idea. So we need to redesign this approach, this top-down approach. We really need to redefine the role of UN and the governments. And in my view, I think they really need to play a much lesser role, much lesser role than... we need to retune the models that we use, right? We see IPCC 1.5, we see the GAP reports. The models play a very important role. On the other hand, though, that they make a lot of assumptions about the capability, about the politics, about the political economy, right? Those assumptions may or may not be very realistic. We need to reinforce this technological change. And right now, with this isolationism, we're not doing a good job. We're back down from where we were. We need to rebalance the economy, not the way that is being done in between the U.S. and China. And we need to do this very, very much in a more positive way. We need to reshape our culture and our concern through the significantly reduce our commercialism, consumerism, and we need to rebuild this civilization. You know, so far, we have to realize, I mean, this is a much bigger problem than just this technical problems, right? In China, we promoted this idea of eco-civilization or ecological civilization. And together, we have to work together to assure our common future. And I totally agree with Nick. I think it's absolutely necessary, absolutely desirable, and we need to work together to reform the governance. Let's make it happen. Thank you very much.